Well, 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 what a position Norwich City find themselves in. They are on the cusp of reaching the Championship playoffs after a win that David Wagner described as massive at Deepdale on Saturday afternoon. Welcome to this week's Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich, reflecting on what was a potentially defining day for the Canaries' top six hopes in Lancashire. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, and joined by my two colleagues, Adam Harvey and Samuel Seaman, to reflect on the events at Deepdale that followed. Gabriel Sarah, obviously, with the winner, brilliant scruffy goal, I think is the way that we're describing it. But it was 3 points. That means the Championship table makes for very good reading from a Norwich City perspective. So let's get this out of the way first and foremost. Norwich City are now, certainly from the teams below them, and then we'll maybe mention the teams above them in a moment, but the teams below them, they've now got a 6-point cushion to Hull in seventh, albeit Hull have a game in hand. It's even more than that. It's 8 points from Coventry, who have a game in hand, 8 from Middlesbrough, and obviously an 8-point gap now from Preston, who also have a game in hand. Borough don't, but Preston's game in hand takes place against Southampton. So, Adam, let's start with you. I mean, before we get on to the win itself, as an afternoon, that felt monumental for Norwich City yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I remember turning to Sam sort of about the 85th minute, Preston had a corner and I was sort of panicking that they were going to score and grab the winner. I mean, a point at sort of the stage, at that stage, and I looked at kind of the results. Coventry were losing. I know Hull were winning, but it kind of felt like it wouldn't be the worst result. Norwich still had it in their own hands. Even if Hull would have won their game in hand, they'd have still been a point behind. And, you know, as we kind of sort of said throughout the whole playoff race, it's just about being the team in control. You know, you're in control of your own destiny, and that's what Norwich would have done. But I mean, the minute that Gabriel Zara sticks it in the bottom corner, you know, you look at the table then and how healthy it looks, you know, it probably alleviates all kind of pressure, I suppose, off the Canaries now heading into these two home games. It feels like probably one victory and it probably does the job. My fear was going to Birmingham on the last day of the season, you know, as kind of demonstrated yesterday with the result they got against Coventry. You know, when teams are desperate at this stage of the season, they often sort of pull out shock results. And, you know, if Norwich would have gone to St Andrews requiring a result, I think that could have been very dangerous territory, you know. And I think now I can say with fairly, you know, high confidence that probably Norwich can see that as a game, you know, just to sort of lead them into the playoffs. So that feels good. You know, the fans, the 1,500 that travelled yesterday, I'm sure we'll come on to talk to more about them. But yeah, they all deserved that because, you know, we've done the long journey up and back over 2 days. But for those that have been on the coaches yesterday morning at 7 a.m. and probably not getting back till sort of 11 o'clock last night, you know, they sort of, you know, would have felt fairly rewarded, I suppose, when Zara stuck it in the bottom corner.
Yeah, and we raise our imaginary hats to all of you that made that trip from wherever you made it from, because it is a long way. As you know, I went to pick up the car on Friday afternoon, and Ian Clark, our esteemed colleague in news, said to me, "This is the fourth longest trip of the season," which is not a phrase I needed to hear just as we were about to hit the road. If he'd have told me it this morning, I'd have been fine with it, but maybe not then. It was a long one, that's for sure. And I think it took us, what, 4.5 each way, which indicates how long it was. Sam, we've mentioned it there, but broaden it out as well to the week that was. Last time we recorded the pod was in the wake of that East Anglian Derby win last Saturday, which was incredible in itself. There was obviously everything that happened around Sheffield Wednesday, which maybe we'll discuss in passing a little bit later on. But as a week, to take 7 points out of those three games, it's probably that consistency and that ability to be consistent, which has given Norwich City the edge over some of those competitors that we mentioned earlier on.
Yeah, I think it's a really impressive haul when you look at it and the way we were speaking about it going into the week. I remember we had a bit of a debate in the car at one point as to whether we would take 2 points from a Norwich perspective from these two games. And when that is a serious debate and you end up taking 4, I think that's always going to be a positive. As you said, that consistency and that ability to deliver when the pressure's on is really what set Norwich apart from their competitors at the moment. I think Southampton were the only other team in the top six that actually managed to get a win, and that told you how important the psychology of it is and how big a role pressure plays at this stage of the season. But I think now we're maybe seeing the benefits of those sorts of intangibles and the recruitment that Norwich did in the summer. And I know we've criticised it a lot, and there are obviously a series of drawbacks to signing so many sort of older players and experienced players that maybe don't have the sell-on value and things like that. But I think you look at how they've managed to cope with these big games in recent week. Well, not only in recent weeks, but also going back to sort of the start of the year when they were beating Coventry and they were beating West Brom and they were beating Hull. Now you get to this end of the season when the jitters are really coming in for a lot of those teams in and around that playoff mix and in and around the promotion mix. And Norwich are the only ones that seem to be performing as consistently as they were sort of 2 or 3 months ago. So, yeah, I think it speaks a lot to the qualities that they have in that dressing room. It speaks a lot to the individual performances that they're grinding out at the moment. And, yeah, I think to reflect on it quickly as sort of a week, it feels like quite often this season we've been saying that whenever they've got a point, if they've managed to follow it up with a win, it feels like a good point. And I think now in the context of yesterday, although there obviously is still frustration about Sheffield Wednesday and the fact that Norwich blew a 2-goal lead against a team that's fighting relegation, I think just looking at the result and looking at 4 points across those two games actually feels like a really impressive haul. And, well, I think the table speaks for itself in how big it could be for their playoff push.
Yeah, it's now I think 11 wins in 17 championship games for Norwich City, which is a remarkable run of form. Over the last 8 matches, no championship team has taken as many points. Norwich have taken 16 from 8. Obviously, you don't need me to do the maths for you. That is the 2 points per game ratio that people speak about and that was probably required really over a really long consistent period of time to get them into the top six from the period that they were in. And it's remarkable what they've done. It was only obviously their sixth win on the road as well this season. All of those statistics, Adam, point towards why Norwich City are in the position they are in at the moment. And it was interesting pre-game, I asked David Wagner about big games and how his team have been in, have kind of got the experience of navigating them. And I guess, you know, at some point we are going to look ahead and hopefully talk about the playoffs unless something goes disastrously wrong in the next few weeks. I mean, this was another case, wasn't it? Because everyone will have heard and seen what Ryan Lowe said pre-game. He described it as the biggest game of his tenure, 2.5 year tenure as Preston boss. They got flags out. There were banners out. There was a palpable sense pre-game that it was a little bit all or nothing for them. And the fact that Norwich City, okay, was it the best performance? Probably not. But they stuck in there. They dug deep. They asked questions. They grew into it. But most importantly of all, I think David said this post-match as well, it was the control that they had throughout that. Because you go to a period, you know, as soon as I heard Ryan Lowe's comments, you think, right, they're going to come out. They're going to be intense. It's going to be lots of balls in the box. It's going to be blood and thunder. And it's going to be about how Norwich City can stand up to that. But actually, they suppressed all of it really nicely. And I think if there's one element that I'm sat here on Sunday morning reflecting on and feeling really content with, it's Norwich City's ability to control all of those kind of elements within their performance, grow into it, and then obviously, as we've spoken about, land the sucker punch at the end.
Yeah, I think the control and possession, you know, you kind of looked at the two sides, you could see the nerves maybe in the Preston side, you know, a lot of sort of balls that went missing, few sort of desperate punts up the pitch towards the latter stages when maybe they were chasing the game. Interesting substitutions, I'd say, from the Preston end as well, which, you know, I know we've spoken a lot about substitutions in recent sort of days and weeks, but I thought maybe that probably killed off the Preston side that was maybe flagging a bit in terms of their stamina levels towards the end. And you know, I think Norwich's ability to, we kind of spoke a little bit about fitness levels actually in sort of our Instagram live from the hotel in the morning. And I felt that Norwich's kind of fitness levels maybe, you know, came to the forefront in the latter stages, you know, to go and win the game and really land a sucker punch to pick up the really big 3 points. And I think their ability to, say, control the ball, frustrate the Preston team, frustrate the crowd, and you could kind of sense the sort of the mood amongst the Deepdale punters towards kind of the, I suppose, the latter stages that, you know, I think they would have heard Ryan Lowe's comments and probably would have gone into the game expecting maybe a bit more blood and thunder, a bit more high intensity from their side. And, you know, I think Norwich, you know, perfect game plan, and credit to David Wagner. I think that's probably been a common theme actually in recent months. You know, he sort of set Norwich up to frustrate these teams and ultimately their quality tells in these moments. And I think obviously it's a massive boost as well when you look at the players that came off the bench yesterday. John Rowe's impact off the bench, absolutely vital. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more about him. But for me, that was a game changer against a defence that was tiring. And, you know, that probably helped itself in the end. And of course, Norwich picked up the, you know, really big 3 points, which, you know, come the end of the season, that probably could be the result that we look back on and think, yeah, that was the one that probably secured the top six.
Yeah, I think we will. And that goes back to the point, Sam, wasn't it? Because in the first half, I felt there was an element, particularly from an attacking perspective, of there wasn't quite the cohesion that we'd seen in recent weeks. Norwich weren't really creating the opportunities that maybe we've come to expect from them in games, even as recently as midweek against Sheffield Wednesday, when they created a huge amount of opportunities. And largely that was due to Sheffield Wednesday really struggling to progress the ball from their own back line. But they were limited really to shots from range. And Gabriel Sara had one that Woodman saved, Borja Sainz as well. There was a volley over the bar. But in terms of properly clear-cut making Freddie Woodman work, there wasn't too many. So how much do you think the first half was about survival from Norwich City's perspective, given the context that we've spoke about there? The fact that they were able to ride out that first 45 minutes, they had scares of their own. Set-piece-wise, I think they looked a little bit shaky at points. Jack Watmore obviously hit the bar on the stroke of half-time. But the fact they got in at the break level, that felt huge for the context of the game and, as we've spoken about, probably taking the wind out of Preston's sails somewhat.
Yeah, I think being able to do that is a really vital skill in the Championship for any team, really, because that tends to be a theme of this division, is the fact that teams maybe do have the quality and they do have the physicality and the momentum at times to give you a physical test and to put you under pressure. But I think aside from maybe the top three or four teams in the division, not all of them, in fact, probably all of them don't have the ability to do that consistency and consistently and to turn those chances into goals. So I think if you can master that ability to ride out waves of attacks and maybe see out sort of moments of momentum for opposition teams, then it is huge for you. And I think that's exactly what Norwich did yesterday. Obviously, Preston will be very frustrated that they didn't manage to turn their dominance into goals, really. But I mean, a lot of it comes down to the ability in both boxes. You look, as you said, at that Sheffield Wednesday game and the number of chances Norwich created versus the number of chances Sheffield Wednesday created. Sheffield Wednesday probably have three chances and score two of them. Norwich have 9 or 10 and score the same number. So while it sort of felt a bit brutal for them on Tuesday, I'm sure Preston will be feeling a similar way after yesterday's loss for them. But yeah, I think there's so much to be said for the ability to assess sort of game states and to manage games well. And I think that's maybe what you don't see from some of those teams in that sort of top end that aren't maybe used to these sort of promotion battles and don't have that experience of going out of the Championship, is that they have the technical players, they have the quality to create the chances, but they maybe don't have the players that know, or who know that sometimes that you need to ride out moments rather than panicking and trying to turn things around immediately. And I think Norwich do well at that. I think when the other team is in the ascendancy, rather than maybe trying to force it too much and trying to get out of it too much and leaving themselves exposed, they are quite good at controlling it. And I think Wagner post-match sort of spoke about how good he was, or how good the team was sort of in rested defence. And I think that was probably a key element in this one. They weren't always trying desperately to win the ball back and to make it about themselves. It was about, okay, Preston are in a good moment and the crowd is loud. The crowd thinks that they might have a decent chance of scoring here. And Norwich just needed to ride out that wave. And I think there was definitely an element of luck at times. You know, they hit the bar. Norwich cleared the ball off the line twice. Those set pieces really did look like a weakness, and you sense there could be some, or that there was some sort of residual feeling maybe and hurt from how the Sheffield Wednesday game went and how Norwich conceded two goals from that avenue. But apart from that, I think they rode it out fairly well. They picked their moments. And I think that's what a lot of those sort of away games are about. When you look at a typical Championship away win, and that's exactly what it was yesterday, it's about picking your moments and scoring at the right time, and not really any better time than the 88th minute or whatever it was that Gabriel Sara popped up and scored that goal. So yeah, I think the way that the game unfolded, I think you could look at it as fortunate, and in some ways it was, but also it was a feat of game management. And I think the players in that group can be proud of the intangibles in that win, as well as, I mean, moments of brilliance such as the winner.
Yeah, and there's that saying, isn't there, that you kind of make your own luck. And I think there was probably an element around that with Norwich City. I mean, you actually look at, and you mentioned it there quite rightly, you look at sort of the expected goals. Well, Preston sort of edged it, really, even though they only had two shots on target in the fixture. They recorded a higher expected goals rate than Norwich did, even though both were relatively low and both were under one. And I think, again, I'd maybe just readjust how people think about that. I think of that as quality of chances created rather than expected goals or whatever. I think that's probably an easier way to utilise that metric. But for me, Adam, and there's been so much, particularly after Leicester and everything that happened there, lots of conversation about balance and getting the right balance. And we know how important that is in the Championship. This kind of felt like they did that well. And to be fair, I think even if they'd have come away with a goalless draw, I think we'd have been saying the same thing because, and Sam referenced it there, I think an element of what was so good and so important yesterday was the fact they didn't go chasing that really. They didn't go chasing a result. They kept playing the way they did. They waited, they were patient, and it paid off in the end. And it did feel like a game because of how close it was, because of how high the stakes were, that it was always going to be settled on a moment. So for Norwich to have achieved that balance in the way that they did, and I'd argue that's probably the second time this week, really, after Ipswich, even though I think the Wednesday performance was, by and large, pretty good as well. That's pleasing to see as well, isn't it? Particularly when we begin to look ahead and about how important that balance is going to be for any potential playoff campaign. The fact that they've able to, in a high-stake game, control it, without the ball, they defended. I felt they prevented transitional opportunities from Preston really well as well. It was good to see that balance, I think, particularly when there's been a lot of criticism of how they've approached stuff on the road. That kind of, if we were going to file it into a cliched place, we'd call that an ideal away performance, wouldn't we?
Yeah, as you know, 1-0 away wins Dean Smith's favourite result to bring him back up. But yeah, no, I think for me, going to Deepdale, you know, Preston have been on a really good run of form. I think it was 2 defeats in 12. Their home form has been pretty decent all season. I think they're seventh in the home table leading into the game. You know, we know Norwich's away record over the course of the season. I think, you know, generally the form away from home has picked up in 2024. But, you know, obviously there has been some tough days on the road. And defensively, you know, it's a very similar defence to that played at Plymouth, and they look a much better organised side. And I think, you know, that sort of blends itself to the coaching and, you know, sort of the coaches involved to you know, get them sort of more organised and a better defensive unit. And then obviously the element of control that they've got in midfield. I think Marcelino Nunez, maybe not even at his best yesterday, but just kind of in those moments where you need someone with a cool, calm head that's collecting the ball in kind of those areas where you need to try and hit in transition. I thought he was a crucial cog in that. And then, you know, you've got the quality then in the attacking areas where you just felt if one moment was to fall to a Norwich player, then they probably put it away. You know, when you've got Gabriel Zara on the pitch, you've got John Rowe, you've got Josh Sargent. You know, we know these players and kind of, I suppose, the record over the course of the season, when balls fall to them in those areas, you know, only takes one effort and they're probably going to find the back of the net. And that, for me, was probably the difference between the two sides yesterday. It was just purely that quality in the final third. You know, Preston didn't really, you know, test Norwich at all. I thought Angus Gunn had a fairly quiet afternoon. Set piece is probably the only real threat I felt that Preston sort of gave to Norwich. You know, there was obviously the one quite near the latter stages where Gunn kind of flapped at it a little bit and McCallum kind of got him out of some hot water by clearing it sort of nearly off the line. But aside from that, I felt fairly calm throughout the game. Felt Norwich executed the plan perfectly. As I said, sort of in a previous answer, frustrated the home crowd. And you know, fair play to David Wagner. I thought, you know, what he said in the post-match was absolutely spot on. Some really kind of, some sort of good quotes kind of around the game and more sort of generally, I suppose, about what's ahead. I think if Norwich can perform to the levels they have probably consistently over the course of 2024 more generally, then, you know, they've given themselves a pretty good shot heading into the playoff games because they can mix it up, you know, in terms of the approach and the way they play. So control, I think control, particularly in playoff games, is crucial. And, you know, Norwich have demonstrated, I'd say, over this week that they've got that. So, yeah, lots of positives to take. So, you know, I think most Norwich fans are in a pretty good mood on this Sunday morning.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. Which probably leads us on, Sam, to talk about the moment that did win it. Which, again, and you know, I know we joked about it being a scruffy goal. And I am going to stand up for Ryan Lowe a little bit because I think as a general rule, if people watch the whole press conference, I thought he was quite measured and he was okay. There's obviously two elements of it that I would fundamentally disagree with, his argument that they were the better side. I think there's maybe, I would say potentially they edged a first half. I wouldn't say they were so dramatically the better team that it hurt. But over the piece, I think it's difficult. And even a lot of the Preston journos that we were sort of sitting in there with in the press conference, I would say room, but that's being generous. What would you call it, Adam? Executive box that we were in? It was a very small
hospitality box. Yeah. I felt like I was about to be brought a three-course dinner, to be honest, if there was a table in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good job Norwich won, because you'd want to be that distance from a Norwich manager after they'd lost. To be completely honest, it was basically face to face, which was good. But even in that kind of setting, they felt on the balance of the second half. So it's not us saying it with our yellow and green tinted glasses or whatever on. They were saying on the balance of the second half, they felt Norwich City deserved to win the game. And it was even going to be a mistake from one team or a moment of magic. It probably turned out to be the latter. And I know Ryan Lowe has described it as a scruffy goal. And I think you have to, again, flip that and look at it from his perspective, where three defenders have had the opportunity to bring Sarah down. Obviously, he's far too good for them to do that. And then probably, if we're being really honest, it probably should have been saved. It's not the best shot in the world from Gabriel Sarah. But from a Norwich perspective, Sam, the goal is a thing of pure beauty from Kenny McLean's pass, and it's absolutely pinpoint. It's eye of a needle stuff how he's slotted the ball through to Gabriel Sarr in that position. The turn to take two defenders out of the game. Then he sits Liam Lindsay down, and then he finds the ball. And we'll pretend it was a beautiful stroke in the bottom corner that nobody could do anything about to round it off. It was a brilliant goal from a player who is going to be playing in the Premier League, I think, with or without Norwich City next season.
Yeah, I think that McLean pass especially was something I'd underrated in real time, because the turn from Sarah is so incredible and so smooth, the way that he does it, that you can completely forget about what's happened before that. But then when I was speaking to Shane Duffy post-match, he highlighted the pass from McLean, and watching it back, as you say, it is complete eye-of-the-needle stuff to be able to get it between those defenders. And then for Sarah to even think of doing that, when I think almost every player would have just tried to control the ball there and keep it away from those two defenders and then see how they could build the attack from there. But he obviously decided that he was going to make something happen. An absolutely fantastic turn in there. And then I think the finish, power-wise, maybe wasn't great, but he does have the accuracy on it that means that, I suppose, when Woodman does get a touch, it pushes it right into the side netting rather than giving a chance for somebody to clear it on the line. And yeah, I think it was the sort of moment that we've come to expect from Gabriel Sarr, but also in the context of his wider performance was really encouraging to see. I think it's been fairly common at times this season to see things like that and fantastic strikes and, you know, well-taken corners that result in goals and assists and goal contributions from the Brazilian. But there have been a few times where you've felt the quality of his end product and the quality of his highlights hasn't been consistent with how well he's been performing throughout the matches. And you maybe want to see him a bit more involved. You want to see him slightly less wasteful in possession. And that is only some of the time. There are obviously have been several games this season where he's been excellent in almost every attribute. And I actually think that yesterday was one of those really consistent, really reliable performance from him. He was fairly involved compared with the rest of Norwich's attackers when you consider actually how sort of the percentage of time they actually spent sort of in that final third. He looked dangerous, and there are times when his penchant for a long shot really is quite frustrating, and a lot of the time they fly over the bar or they go wide. But I think every one of those actually tested Freddie Woodman. He sprayed some lovely passes across the pitch and out wide, as I think we've all come used to seeing. Ali combined with Jack Stacey really well and created space for him out wide. So, yeah, I think overall a really, really good performance from Gabriel Sarr, and the sort of moment that I think has come to define Norwich's season. And you have to give David Wagner credit, because defensively they do look very organised, and I think we can all see the elements of the game that have improved organisationally. But it has been a consistent theme throughout the season that Norwich just have excellent players that probably shouldn't be playing in this division. Gabriel Sarr is probably the chief example of that. And they've benefited from that, I think, 23 times now this season. So, or in the Championship, he's also scored in the FA Cup. And yeah, just a fantastic player and somebody who, when Norwich really, really need it, comes up with moments like that. And I don't think Norwich even really especially needed it yesterday. It felt like, as I think Adam said earlier, a draw would have been a good result. But as far as bonuses go, that's pretty much as big as they come. And yeah, an absolutely fantastic finish by a fantastic player.
Is the biggest compliment that we can pay to him, Adam, the fact that he's been dropped in a role that he doesn't really know how to play? It's, and I recognise there's an inverted nature to it, and a lot of the time he ends up central, but he is having to play in sort of a wider area of the pitch a lot of the time, particularly more so out of possession. Actually, it is the area from which he engineered the goal, and obviously because he's left-footed, he's able to come in and offer Norwich City a real attacking threat, and it has worked quite nicely. But the fact that Norwich City have essentially been able to pick him up, drop him in, and he's just gone, yep, okay then. That's a sign of his intelligence, isn't it? The fact that he's almost not broken stride. And I think there's been a debate long had throughout the season about whether he is better in more advanced areas or deeper areas, or maybe it doesn't even matter. It feels like this kind of position is one that is getting the best out of him from an attacking perspective. We're seeing him construct more and be more involved with Norwich City's attacking play. So is this positional change, even though it was probably enforced rather than one that was engineered and crafted for him, it's a sign of his intelligence, isn't it, as a footballer?
Yeah, I think I've been an advocate to see him further advance for quite a lot of the season, really. I don't feel you get the best out of him in the deep line playmaker role that he's sort of occupied for quite sort of sustained spells of this season. You kind of look at that maybe dry patch in terms of goal contribution, sort of the December-November period, and that was kind of the period, I suppose, where Norwich were struggling more generally, but he was probably not getting the same influence on the game from sort of a goal and assist, you know, sense. And yeah, I think we've seen the best out of him really in recent weeks. I'd have to sort of double check his goal tally in terms of sort of maybe the last 5 or 10 games, but it's certainly got to be up there in terms of kind of the Championship more generally in terms of numbers that he's pulling up. And you know, as proven yesterday, that little bit of quality, particularly sort of in and around the box, he's got it. You know, anywhere that's kind of you know, in the final third of the pitch, you'd back him to produce some sort of magic, I suppose, and sort of win Norwich City the game. We've seen it so consistently, really, over the course of his Norwich City career. And for a man that's started every single Championship game this season, he doesn't really seem like he's lacking on fitness. You know, I think that probably was an element maybe when he arrived from South America. You know, their seasons are nowhere near as long, probably not as enduring sort of physically and mentally maybe as what a Championship campaign is. But I think he's adapted to life here pretty well now, and the league more generally. And you know, when you've got a player of that quality that's, you know, probably almost playing a level below where he should be, you know, in moments like that and games like that, that probably decides the game and probably the difference between the two sides, really. Because, you know, we've kind of spoken about it, it was a fairly even tussle. Maybe Norwich edged the second half, Preston edged the first half, but you know, it's kind of the moments in and around the box. And you know, that's a position that he can play anywhere. The intelligence you should reference, you know, to play out of position and still produce those numbers, that's a credit to him. And of course, you know, I think the coaching staff as well. David Wagner probably is someone who's got to take a lot of credit for Gabriel Zara, because you look at that sort of first 6 months of his Norwich City career under Dean Smith, we could see the quality there, but maybe it wasn't being extracted. It feels like David Wagner, irrespective of where he's playing him, he's got the confidence levels in the lad. You know, he's told him he's, you know, a crucial compartment of this team. And yeah, they're reaping the benefits of that now.
Yeah, they are. And obviously him being so efficient in forward areas is allowing Marcelino Nunez to achieve some consistency as well. And I think we are without doubt in what is the best period of his Norwich City career. Even yesterday, there was a stat put out, I think it was NCFC numbers, saying 8 of Norwich's 12 tackles were made by Marcelino Nunez. The passes that he made, I actually felt he was a little bit loose at points for his high standards. But as a general rule, I think he is the reason why Norwich City have perhaps been able to show a little bit more control. I have just done the maths, I think, around that. And I think it is 7 goals and 3 assists in his last 12. So 10 goal contributions in 12 for Gabriel Sarro. And that is off the back of what was a pretty barren run. I think it was 13 games, wasn't it, without a single goal contribution. He's now got 23 in 43. So the fact that it's now essentially 20 games in which he hasn't contributed a goal is absolutely staggering for a player. And of course, there's a wider debate to be had around this, Sam, because with Nunez cementing his place in the middle of the pitch, with Gabriel Sarro looking so adept on the right-hand side, with David Wagner liking that Barnes and Sargent duo up front, the question is, how the hell do you get Johnny Rowe back in this back in this starting 11 for Norwich City. It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've been poring over for a little while, and I suppose it's probably something Wagner has to get thinking about as well, because for anyone who'd forgotten his talents, I think his cameo yesterday reminded everyone quite the levels that he can produce. Out wide, he came on, he threatened defenders, and it's actually remarkable what a man can achieve by just standing in front of a defender and wobbling his shoulders back and forth, because yeah, he seems to be one of the best I've ever seen at that. And he definitely gives Norwich an option that I don't think anyone else gives them. I think Borja Sainz is obviously that similar type of sort of direct winger that wants to get forward, but I don't think he's quite as good at taking players on, and I don't think that his dribbling is at the same level that Jonathan Rose is, and I don't think he's as likely to create chances for himself as Rowe is as well. So maybe that's an area that Wagner will look at, and maybe he'll feel that although Borja Sainz has been a key player for Norwich as they've been, you know, coming up the league, and I think everyone knows his qualities, if you can replace him with Jonathan Rowe, is that a decision you make? I don't know if that's sort of coming into his thinking, but also I think it puts everyone on guard, and in a sense Norwich are almost benefiting from the fact that they've got a couple of players almost out of position or that jostling going on between several players, because whereas normally it might be Jonathan Rowe pushing Christian Fasnacht, and Fasnacht is the only one that maybe benefits from that competition, it feels like Rowe is pushing Barnes, Sainz, Sarah, Nunez as well, actually, because obviously all of those players are affected by what I think most people would see as the simplest way to rearrange things and put Rowe back out on the right. So it's so strange the impact that one player can have on the competition in, I mean, pretty much every area aside from the back four of the squad. And I think that probably tells you what a key player he is. I think for me, and probably for a lot of Norwich fans, you almost forgot how good he was, because Norwich have been doing really well without him. And it hasn't been like a Josh Sargent type impact where they've just collapsed without him in that team. But then you throw him in even just for 20 minutes against Preston, and I think I was just reminded, wow, like, this kid really is something special. I say this kid, I think he's like 1 year younger than me or something. But yeah, he's one of those players that it's really, really hard not to find a way to include. And it feels like even if Wagner does continue with the team the way that it is at the moment, as soon as they even draw a game, it's going to be hard for him to turn around to Jonathan Rowe and say, OK, I'm keeping you out of the team now. So yeah, definitely a very, very interesting debate that Wagner will have to have probably with himself and his coaching staff. But I don't think he's going to be able to deny Jonathan Rowe for long. And I think if Norwich do end up in the playoffs, which obviously, as we've said, feels very, very likely, I would expect that he'll be in that starting 11 by then. I have absolutely no idea who it will be in place of. But I've just got a feeling that I think, and probably everyone connected does have that feeling that he will be in there before too long.
Yeah, and I think Jonathan Rowe is the type of character that will back himself to get back in. And, you know, it's weird because on one sense, the type of role that he played yesterday, I think you could see that certainly for the next few weeks whilst they build him up, you could see that being really viable, because against a tired defence, he is everything that you hate as a defender. He wants to get in behind. He wants to run at you. He wants to, as you mentioned, he leaves your head spinning in about 15 different directions. He can go outside. He can go inside. He can put a cross in. He can have a shot. It's so dangerous for defenders when they're 100% fit, let alone when they're 60, 70, 50% fit with 20 minutes to go or so. So, Adam, same question, really. How do you get Jonathan Rowe back in this team? What changes are you making to get him back in the side?
Yeah, I suppose Borja Sainz, maybe not his best game yesterday. If his levels need to be pushed back up, is there an opportunity there to kind of use Jonathan Rowe as almost a bait to try and push him? But that's probably incredibly harsh, because he's been incredibly, you know, positive in terms of his sort of goal contributions and sort of what he does for the side in terms of the attacking areas. He's another crucial cog. So yeah, it feels really, really, really tough. But you know, you kind of mentioned it, the bench element, I think, in these kind of upcoming games, where maybe I felt Norwich maybe still needed to pick up some results to sort of secure top six. Maybe the sort of stress of that has, of course, been alleviated now, as we've mentioned. But he's the sort of player, you know, as you sort of referenced there, who, against tiring defences, it is so dangerous. I actually saw a Preston supporter yesterday on X kind of saying that he felt Jonathan Rowe is a player that might go play for England, and that's a lad who's literally been out for, you know, 3 or 4 months now, and you know, it's not, probably clearly not at the sort of the levels that maybe he was at the start of the season when he was absolutely flying. So that's high praise for him, and for me, that probably just understates how, you know, how crucial a player he is for this side, and you know what we hopefully will get out of him, I suppose, going into these playoff games, because he is the man for the moment. But I'm kind of glad I'm not making that decision that it's David Wagner that's got to try and fit him back into this team, because it's a nice problem to have, but it's a problem that, you know, you've got a lot of players that are all in great form, all very much deserving of a place in the starting 11 at the moment, and to try and sort of keep them all happy, and that is, you know, down to man management. And to be fair to David Wagner, I think if you're sort of talking man management skills, he's probably one of the better managers more generally. You know, that experience, I suppose, he's had down the years in the Championship and, of course, in higher divisions elsewhere in Europe. I think, you know, that sort of management of players has clearly been, you know, tested at different points. And I think, you know, that the skill that he's got is clearly something. There's a credit to him. And of course, you know, hopefully that will get the best out of these players, particularly when maybe in this sort of, you know, end of the season and you want the best out of these players, you're going to need it. And I think, you know, hopefully that bodes well for Norwich.
I think if you were doing it on like pure quality, and if you were closing your eyes and you'd like imagined a front four, I'm going to paint a picture for you. You've got John Rowe one side, Borja Sainz on the other, Gabriel Sarr behind Josh Sargent. That as a four feels pretty in Championship standards up there with the very best at this level, beyond maybe the teams that obviously have the parachute payments and maybe will, I don't know, no one wants to win the Championship, but maybe one of them will eventually accidentally, and it could be one of those sides. It feels certainly amongst the top four or five in the division. But then even there, you know, we referenced Borja Sainz there. That feels incredibly harsh on Ashley Barnes. And I think you then lose a lot of the stuff that has made Josh Sargent so prolific at the top end of the pitch. And he's excellent foil for him. And I think we have seen an increase in his performances. So even that is difficult. So yeah, I'm really not sure. Is it there? Are we then looking at Marcelino Nunez and saying, well, actually, you've got to get Gabriel Sarr back in the middle to get Jonathan Rowe out wide? Again, that feels like you would lose something doing that. So yeah, I think all of this is given, I think probably the where I'm going to segue into is a really nice conversation to be having. And I think we all saw Jonathan Rowe's impact, and it's brilliant to have him back, and definitely the right time to get him back, because if, and we hope there's obviously 3 games left, we hope for another 3 on top of those in playoffs. Feels like now Norwich City have a really good opportunity just to sort of build him back up again, to get into a position where, come hopefully a home playoff semi-final, first leg, he's ready to go. He's explosive. He's fully fit. He's determined, and he's almost, you know, absolutely champing at the bit to go and attack that. That is the position that you want to get to. And obviously Norwich have a few weeks to get there. So it might not necessarily be an issue for the next week, but I think thereafter this conversation becomes very real, and it'll be interesting to see how David Wagner juggles that. And that is, again, to reiterate, a very good debate to have, and it's indicative of lots of Norwich City players performing very well, probably all at the right time as well. It does lead us on, Sam, to I think something else that I just wanted to touch upon, because, and I'm sure people saw after the draw against Sheffield Wednesday, and there was obviously a lot of criticism of David Wagner for his substitutions. I'll be honest, I felt it was quite harsh in terms of criticism, because I think both things can be true. It can be true that Norwich City missed a lot of opportunities that should and would have put that game beyond any sort of reasonable doubt and killed off any prospect of a Sheffield Wednesday comeback, looking at Gabriel Sarr, looking at Jack Stacey in the second half of those opportunities. But there were some in the first half as well. Ashley Barnes missed one. Nunez missed one. So they fashioned enough opportunities to win that game. So that can be true. And then obviously the substitutions that took place saw him maybe get criticised, and then obviously Norwich then go and squander a 2-goal lead. There were some comments from, I don't want to dwell on that one so much, but there were some comments from him after the game about the thinness of the squad and the fact, and people will have seen it with the team sheet yesterday, Norwich City's bench included Kellen Fisher, Ken Abou, Pedro Lima, Guilherme Montoya, Finlay Welsh, five really young players. Some of them haven't made senior debuts. Waylon Rennecke was also at Deepdale. We saw him pre-game sort of doing some fitness tests. I think he was taken in case John Rowe wasn't quite ready to go, or Josh Sargent, but it panned out that both of them were. There is, and those comments were interested. David Wagner did look and sort of, I don't want to say blamed, but he did point out that the decisions made in January were a contributing factor to this. When we begin to look beyond this season, is it a concern that you've got a head coach who, you know, let's be honest, those are criticisms of decisions that Ben Napper, I suppose Neil Adams as well, would have been involved in taking. I mean, that's a very difficult situation long term, isn't it, to have a head coach and a sporting director who aren't quite on the same page. Obviously, I want to reiterate, this is a conversation. I think the whole David Wagner conversation is one to park very much until the end of the season. But obviously, because it's something that came up in the last week, I think we've got to talk about it. What are your thoughts in terms of his comments there and how this plays out long term?
Yeah, I think it's the latest in a series of comments from both him and Ben Napper that suggests to everyone that they have quite different principles. And as much as Napper can almost put Wagner in a corner and force him into putting those young players on the bench, he can't make him put them on the pitch. And it does feel like there is, to use the infamous word, a bit of a disconnect between what those two different decision makers want. And I don't think that is especially good news for the club long term. Obviously, going into a summer where, with the number of players that Norwich have out of contract, potentially if they don't go up, the number of star players that they'll have leaving on big money deals. It feels like Norwich will probably have to sign 8 or 9 players plus. And if you're Ben Napper in that scenario, it's almost like, which camp do you pick when you sign those players? Do you go for your principles and the principles that he's publicly said he wants to instill at Norwich? Do you go for lowering the age profile and having a technical, exciting team that dominates games? Or do you go for, presuming David Wagner is still in his job, do you go for experienced players and reliable players who are good at defending first if they're defenders or midfielders, and then maybe have a bit of pace to counter-attack if they're in attacking areas? And it feels like those two ideas are so separate that it's quite hard to even find a middle ground where you could recruit players that sort of tick off some of the boxes that Napper wants to tick off and take things in the right direction while also pleasing Wagner and giving him options that he wants to use. Because if you can't find a way of giving Wagner the players that he wants, the alternative is that his squad of players that he wants to use just gets smaller and smaller, and it shrinks until he's in a position where he's barely got anyone to choose from, which, to be honest, is the position he's in now. So I think you take this position that he's in now with the injuries that Norwich have got, and you apply it to the whole of a season in the Championship, just given sort of suspensions and injuries and different reasons that players are unavailable. I mean, you can't get through a Championship season with a squad of players that a coach is as happy or as unhappy to choose from, really, as Wagner has now. So I don't see it as sustainable in the long term. Obviously, as you said, it plays into that whole debate about Wagner's future, and you know, it also probably isn't the time to be having that. But I think the issues with it are clear for everyone to see, really, and it's not a good sign in the long term. I mean, even in the short term, they've got a striker there in Sidney van Hooijdonk who's scored plenty of goals at Eredivisie level and is probably desperate to prove himself, that just isn't getting a chance. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting thread to observe. And while things are sort of in flux at Norwich at the moment and the future isn't clear in any sense at all, it will make for some fairly interesting drama in the summer, I think. And although we've been saying this pretty much every season for the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I think it is a huge, huge summer for the football club. Obviously, whether they get promoted or not plays probably the biggest role in that. Whether Wagner is in the job plays a massive role as well. And where Napper stands on his principles versus the head coaches, that's also an interesting debate. So yeah, a lot of different directions this can go in, but at the moment it doesn't feel like it's going in an especially positive one long term.
Yeah, and again, it's worth saying that we don't know how much compromise there is on either side, particularly in the long term. But what you've got playing out here feels to me, and I say feels to me because obviously we're not inside Colney every day, and you don't have access to the level of conversation that I'm sure those two are having and have had since he took the job in November. But it feels, Adam, like quite a public disagreement between ideas. You've got a sporting director who wants to see and wants younger players involved, and a head coach who maybe feels the quality of those young players, coupled with a striker that was signed in January, isn't at the level where he feels comfortable enough with dropping them into high state championship games like Norwich City played in yesterday when Sydney Van Hooijdonk came on. It was his first minutes in four games. He's been an unused substitute in some of those, but we saw on Tuesday night when Norwich had to bring Sargent off because of that slight quad issue, it was Liam Gibbs that he turned to, and then it was Christian Fashnacht that he turned to. Van Hooijdonk wasn't in that conversation. So I guess I guess the question is does Wagner have a point? That's probably the first question to ask. And then secondly, it is how is their compromise on this? And how is their compromise going forward? If it is going to be these two that lead Norwich City into next season and beyond, what is the middle ground that they need to find in your view?
Yeah, obviously I'm not a manager, but you look kind of more generally at the Championship. I think, you know, most clubs probably don't have the luxury of players that Norwich City do have more generally. You know, you look at kind of the quality levels. Let's be quite frank, you know, no player's probably got the same quality level as Gabriel Zara. I think you've kind of got to accept that. And the reality is most squads in the Championship probably do have to have a similar number of youth players that evolve because, you know, the sort of, I suppose the financials for a lot of these clubs is very drastically different to, you know, those of Leeds, Leicester, even Norwich, really, you know, given kind of, I know they're not sort of in the same boat as some of the clubs at the top, but they're still probably a lot better off than a lot of other clubs. And I think that probably lends itself to the fact you have to use youth. You know, I mean, you look at someone like Daniel Farke when he was here, he probably didn't really have the option but to try and use youth players if he felt that a senior player wasn't up to the scratch that he wanted. You know, it probably was sort of that motive that maybe made him chuck in Max Aarons at Portman Road. It was probably the motive that made him chuck on Jamal Lewis in various moments, you know, and let's face it, those players probably flourished and maybe developed even further by the fact they got senior minutes. And, you know, I felt someone like, even like Abu Kamara, I think this season, you know, is probably demonstrating, I know he's a level below, but he's starting every single week in a Portsmouth side. And I know it's taken him maybe a few months to get to the levels he's at now, but, you know, because I saw criticism probably from Portsmouth fans around October time that maybe, you know, he wasn't the player they thought he was. But now look at him, you know, he's one of the star assets in League One. We're all talking about him next season as someone who we want to see in this Norwich City side. You know, if it's in the Championship particularly, I think, you know, if they're in the Premier League, maybe it's a whole different debate into whether he can quite step up to that level at this moment in time. But even John Rowe, look at pre-season, I think, you know, there was probably a bit of speculation. Does he go out on loan? Will he be someone who's involved? Start of the season, in the starting 11, kicks on. I think, you know, for me, I don't see really any major risk in throwing on youth players at different points. You know, if you chuck them on and it doesn't work out, I think, you know, maybe then it's looking at it more generally and saying, okay, maybe it isn't the right time for these players. And loans obviously are, you know, a crucial part in that. But I think it's probably more that David Wagner's come into a side that's had the luxury of lots of senior players that maybe a lot of other Championship clubs don't have. And, you know, I think Ben Napper probably realises he probably deals more with those in sort of the corridors of Carrow Road that look at the financials, they look at kind of the situation of the club more generally, and they probably don't have the choice of being able to sign, you know, effectively two starting 11s that if every player gets injured, you've got someone to drop in of a similar quality. I just think that's just not realistic, you know, when you look at it more generally. And then obviously it all comes back to the point about, you know, what Ben Napper outlined when he arrived and kind of the stylistic, you know, element of football. Does David Wagner fit that box? He probably still feels that maybe there's an inner pressure on him to develop. You know, I can imagine the noises more generally outside of Carrow Road and sort of the fan base around him and his future. It probably is a bit distracting and maybe sort of feeds into the frustration he sort of outlet to us at Hillsborough post-match. And it's not healthy. I don't think it helps anyone, you know, more generally. It doesn't feel like, you know, I mean, Wagner spoke about unity yesterday and how club, you know, the club felt united. There's clearly a sort of lack of, you know, unity between him and Ben Napper because of the comments he made, you know, during the week. And I think, you know, moving forwards, you want two sort of, you know, two senior figures in your football club to be on the same page. That's kind of what led Stuart Webber and Daniel Farke to sort of the magical couple of seasons we had in the Championship. It was two, you know, individuals that are on exactly the same page. They both believed in each other and sort of the principles of, you know, each other and kind of what they saw for the club more long term. And obviously, you know, they reap the benefits of the youth development. So, yeah, interesting to see what happens in the summer. Of course, you know, as Sam said, it's something that, you know, David Wagner's future is something we're going to park for a long time yet. You know, if Norwich are in the Premier League, maybe that decision's a completely different, you know, one to maybe if they finish in the playoffs and lose quite heavily in the semi. So, yeah, lots up in the air, but yeah, not maybe not healthy, I think, for the long term.
Yeah, I think also in that healthiness debate, I don't think it's necessarily beneficial to go down the road of one man's right and one man's wrong. I don't necessarily think that's the case either. I think it's just a two different ideas. And it comes back to what you said there. If you've got a group of, you know, it's all very well and good as a club saying you want to push young players forward, but a few strands to that. They have to be good enough. You have to have a coach that's willing. And if you don't have those, then it's pointless anyway trying to push young players through. And, you know, again, we could have a whole separate debate about whether players like Chemislav Poeta, Adam Forshaw, maybe even Adam Eder, whether they would have made impacts over this second half of the season that would have been greater than some of those young players on the bench. But fundamentally, and this is just the last point I would make on this before we go on to some other trivial matters, I feel for those young players a little bit, because you've got a situation now where you look at Abo and you look at Finlay Welsh. They've not really played any minutes since March of their football. And you've got, I know Abo's out of contract, but you've got players here who Norwich need to develop. That's a necessity for this football club because of the financial model, because they need to ensure that they have a conveyor belt of talent that they can sell for money in order to survive. That's the reality of the situation. But more broadly for these younger players, every time you step out onto the pitch, every time you go and do a training session, every time you don't do a training session, every time you're not included in a game, then you are being judged and your future is being judged at a certain club at a certain time. And there are always people below you that you're being pitted against. Who's the highest? Who's the one that's likely to come through? And if there's one below you who's suddenly more seen as more capable, more viable as an option in the long term, well, that's you done. So This period, and I asked David Wagner about this as well pre-game, finding that balance between obviously the necessity of having to have those players in the squad because the numbers are so thin at the moment, coupled with managing their development, that is very, very difficult. And if you are going to include them in a first team squad, they can't be there to, as they have been at the moment, make up the numbers. They have to be there because they genuinely believe that they can push and that they can ask questions of the players in front of them. And you know, let's be honest about it. At Deepdale, Norwich City could have had four on the bench: George Long, Sidney Van Hooijdonk, Danny Barton, and John Rowe. That they probably could have gone with that. Maybe Callum Fisher as well, who's had first team minutes and has done pretty well in points of getting those first team minutes. So yeah, this is it's an interesting one to monitor. But I think this is the first opportunity that we've had to discuss them. And it's worth saying as well, I think we have done this on several occasions, There is loads that you can praise David Wagner for: the turnaround in form, the performances, the run, getting Norwich City in a position that they are. You know, you can have nuance in these debates as well. It's never just you have to 100% praise someone or you have to 100% criticise them. It's always plenty of in-between within that, which probably leans us onto maybe some more lighter notes throughout the weekend. Gents, who wants to take the fire alarm issue? Let's deal with that first and foremost.
I can sort that one if you want. I'm assuming you're going to come on to a car story that I probably know less about than you two, so I can deal with the alarm. That was so interesting. Obviously, we stayed at the hotel, as you mentioned.
No, that's the word I used at the time, to be honest. But,
yeah, we stayed at the hotel Friday night. All good. Lovely meal. Just like a few hours before, went to bed. And then about 2 a.m, I woke up. You know how it is when you're delirious and you've been asleep for a while and you're not really sure what's going on. I woke up to this loud alarm. And my brain that had just woken up immediately felt like I was in a shop and I'd paid for something, but the alarm was still going on when I was leaving. I was like, well, I've paid for everything. Right. Jumped out of bed. I was like, okay, that's not what's happening. I am in bed. And then looked out the window. All I've seen was one hotel employee running, looking rather stressed from one building to another. Alarm's still going off. I'm getting dressed thinking I might die here. I might have to jump out of a window if the hotel is burning down. So I just get like hoodie and shorts on, just as I'm about to pop my head out the door to see who's screaming and crying and running around, the alarm just stops, and then no word of it in the morning. That was it. That was the whole story. I'm assuming it was a fire alarm. I don't know what's going on. I think there were a few people at the hotel that had gone to the races or were going to the races and had a night out before. I don't know if one of them was accidentally lent on a fire alarm, but yeah, it was definitely one of the less relaxed experiences I've had at 2 a.m. in a hotel. But yeah, it's all all gone now and Norwich won and I'm rested, so I'm willing to forgive them. But if I was speaking on this podcast after another maybe 2 hours of sleep and Norwich had been the wrong end of a 1-0 at Preston, I think I would have been more willing to bash the hotel probably.
Yeah, so on this, I thought this was just, when it happened at the time, I thought it was just confined to my room. So I was like, what the hell have I pressed? And then I was like wondering, is like somebody got in? And then you're scrambling around, what can I use as a weapon? And all this is going through your head in about, but I don't know what I thought I was going to do.
I was going to say, did you find anything that you were going to, did you get like the
no,
TV?
No, by the time I sort of scrambled around, I was probably more focused on, right, where would I hide? That was probably where my head went at. You're doing that in about 3 or 4 seconds. And then, yeah, and then it went off. And I was even sort of looking at switches and looking at if I'd switched something I shouldn't have switched, and like if there was some sort of alarm that I'd set for 2:30 in the morning. But yeah, it wasn't ideal. I can imagine that's what it's like when when footballers go in hotels and opposing fans like set fireworks off outside their window at stupid times of the morning. Maybe it was a tactic from some of our media rivals to try and put us off ahead of a big day at Deepdale. I'll then take over. I don't know if you've got any humorous stories from the weekend, Adam. Maybe you do. But on our way back last night, and it's a long old poke. So we stopped. Where did we stop? It was in Pontefract, wasn't it? Where we stopped initially for some food from a fast food chain. We do have a story about that actually, which I'll ask Adam about in a moment. Well, I've just remembered it. But we had to then go up a little bit further up the road to Blyth Services to get some fuel. It's a very, very, you know, as service as petrol stations go, a very traditional one. It's an Asda branded one. I walk, you know, I filled the car up, the pinking car up with fuel. I've gone inside to pay for said fuel. It's about what was it? Just before 10 o'clock at night, I'd say. It was quite late. So I was the only one in there. I've walked in and there's a woman behind the counter. So we do the transaction. And then at the end of it, she just looks at me and says, do you want some free muffins? Now, I don't know what's going on here, quite frankly. Is it, you know, is this sort of some sort of kidnap attempt? Is this just my natural charm? Is she taking pity on me? You know, and I'll leave it up to maybe people to decide which one it was. But yeah, I get handed a lovely box of 16. I think it's 16, isn't it, Sam? Because you're using it to prop it up. Maybe you can sort of hold it up in front of the camera whilst I'm speaking. Unfortunately, it's blueberry muffins. I'm not a massive blueberry muffin fan, but I'm from Norfolk. And, you know, I was brought up that if anyone offers you anything within reason, there you go, that is free, then you take them. So there we are. That is a free reduced sticker on them. I think they were meant to be £1.22. We've had an absolute steal there, gents, and I bounced back to the pink and car with glee to share the news of the free muffins that we had got, and now Sam has taken them home with him, and we were debating just beforehand whether or not he could freeze them, because I think the date on them is quite short. So that was a nice bonus on the end of a good day. Now, Adam, I'm going to come to you. Tell us about the story that happened in the fast food chain. It was McDonald's. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. We're not the BBC. The fast food chain that occurred because it got a little bit heated, didn't it, to bring the heat segment, which we're going to do in just a minute.
Yeah, we got diverted through Pontefract kind of town centre, I'd assume. I don't think it's a city. I think it's a town. And yeah, we see the big M. We're like, yep, this is time for, you know, food in the belly. We were starting to feel the hunger, I suppose, at that point. Get out the car, you know, sort of just as you do, about to walk into the store, and all this like shouting match is going on at the drive-thru, and we're sort of a bit confused. We're like, what's going on here? I hear someone, I think it might be the woman in the car, saying, we've only ordered 20 chicken nuggets, and I got the impression they'd been waiting quite a long time. And the rage was starting to set in between this couple in the car, and then there was about 2 or 3 managers of the store, you know, arguing with them back, and it all got a bit heated. Sort of trying to keep my cool as I looked across to see what was going on. But yeah, that was eventful. So I suppose if you're ever in the Pontefract area around about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, maybe avoid the certain McDonald's store that we went to.
It's one of those, isn't it, where you're trying not to look, but you can't not look, and it's like, because you don't want to get involved in it, and you don't want someone to catch your eye and bring you into it, but at the same time, you want to know what's going on. The doors to the drive-through were slamming; they were opening again. They were slamming. It was very entertaining, and yeah, the guy sounded, it wasn't Ben Gibson, but he sounded a little bit like Ben Gibson. So yeah, there we go. That I guess is what happens, isn't it, when hunger kicks in. Very, very quickly then, because I recognise we are desperately eating through our time. We're going to end with our Bring the Heat segment. I recognise we haven't really had much time to speak. Well, we did at the start, I guess, speak about the playoff debate. The one other thing that I wanted to mention, and I'll just skim over it because I don't think we're going to have much time to talk about it, is obviously the result yesterday ensures that now West Brom are brought back into view as well. They were beaten by Sunderland. Norwich now just 1 point behind them, which means from the last three stroke four games, we've got competition as well, actually. I wanted to mention that purely for my own reason because I'll forget. The maximum points available that each team can get now, between now and the end of the season, and again, there's a few caveats within this, is as follows. West Brom can get 81, Norwich can get 80, Hull can get 77, Coventry can get 75, but those two obviously play each other, so one of those won't be, at least one of those won't be achieving that maximum of points. Middlesbrough can get 72, so Norwich need one more point to be in a position where Middlesbrough can no longer catch them, and Preston have 75 as well, but Preston also play West Brom, which means neither of those can get the maximum amount of points as well. So that all of that means that Norwich City are very, 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 very close to securing their top six spot. Maybe even one more win from three games would do, with obviously two home games against Bristol City and Swansea to come up. Right, Bring the Heat. This is obviously the segment brought to us, brought to you with us, my word, I can't speak now, we're an hour in and it's gone to pot. This is a segment that Coleman's of Norwich help us out with, and it is with them that we do this. That's what I was trying to say. And I've got one, and it was from Jeffman. So I'm going to steal Jeffman's one from X onto mine. He said that he wanted to award it to the Norwich City Medical Department. So I'm going to row in behind this one. I'm going to completely steal his submission to the podcast for making sure that Josh Sargent and John Rowe were back for what was a massive championship game. And it was obviously vitally important. So there you go. Norwich City's medical team, you brought the heat for me this week. Adam Harvey, who brought the heat for you?
Well, I've got two. I've got one that's on the pitch and one off the pitch. Off the pitch will be the well-renowned duct tape that we bought from
I forgot about this.
Store. So we were travelling up on the Friday night, and I think I was on the M62, and we stopped at a Starbucks. I wonder if this is where someone's maybe clipped our wing mirror, and we got on the M62 and it was starting to flap around a little bit, enough that I could still...
It was clinging on for dear life. Well,
It was clinging. You could just about see... And it kind of got to the point where I was like, yeah, we really cannot risk this, particularly on the way home. So had a nice stop in Chorley yesterday morning, going into a certain bargain store. And
sights this weekend, didn't we?
We did. Invested in some tape, and that done the job to get us back. So that brought partial heat off the pitch. But on the pitch, I'm going to go for Shane Duffy. I thought getting back into the starting 11, of course, missed that during the week. Kind of Wagner outlined the sort of fitness element of that. You know, there's sort of... That's where the energy exerted in the Ipswich game, and just sort of rested him for this big game on Saturday, which maybe felt more accustomed to him going to Preston, you know, and kind of the physicality. Oh, Sheffield Wednesday are still a physical side, but Preston certainly from sort of corners. And it felt like he won pretty much every aerial duel that was thrown at him yesterday. Pretty commanding in terms of his leadership at the back as well. And for me, that was vital probably in securing a clean sheet. And, you know, I think that for him probably personally would have felt like one of his better performances as well in what's been a really good season more generally for him. You know, I know he had sort of some critics at certain points, sort of, you know, when Norwich were sort of falling away a little bit around September, October. But I think, you know, he's probably proven his worth in recent weeks. And that still, you know, looks a really good addition to this side last summer.
Sam, very, 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 very quickly, who brought the heat for you?
Kane McLean. Cleared it off the line and played that fantastic pass into Sarah for the goal. I think he's one that has been so good that we almost got bored talking about him for a bit. But yeah, another very good performance from him. Also, a quick honourable mention to Sam McCallum, who also cleared the ball off the line. That's something that I was looking at this morning that I completely forgot happened. But Norwich did clear the ball off the line twice. So yeah, credit to those two players, but especially Kenny McLean, who I thought had a very good game.
Good man, and very quickly done as well. And also very quickly, just because we like to keep people updated on this podcast, you might have seen, because we did put it out on socials, but congratulations to Mr. Paddy Davitt and his wife. They've welcomed their second child earlier this week on Thursday, little baby girl, both parties all doing very well. So that's good to hear. And obviously we look forward to having Paddy back as soon as possible. But I think we're going to be without him for definitely the rest of the season. I don't know if his wife knows this, but I don't think he quite closed the door on the playoffs. So we'll see. But I would be shocked. I think if Norwich get to Wembley, he's definitely going to be there for that. We are going to end though, because we've got a competition. Now, if like me, you absolutely love playing Football Manager, and I've got a brilliant save at the moment where I am taking Leyston. Sorry, they are Suffolk-based, but they are sort of managed by Darren Eadie. So there is a Norwich link there that I think it makes it okay. I've just taken them into the National League. And it's a brilliant game because we're all frustrated Football Managers, I think. And the brilliant news that I think came relatively recently is that we are now in Football Manager. The Pinken are in Football Manager. So if you take on the role of replacing and succeeding David Wagner in that particular hot seat, and you do your press conferences in the game, you will be asked questions by the Pinken, the Eastern Daily Press, and Norwich Evening News. Sadly, not us personally, but, well, I say sadly, you can make your own mind up on that. It might be a blessing. But because of this, we are celebrating. You can obviously win a chance to win the game, which is worth $44.99 for use in Steam. So what you need to do, I'm going to put the details on the screen now for people watching on YouTube. We'll make sure it's in all of the relevant pieces below audio if you're listening on that, and also YouTube as well. So you have to answer this question, and I can't believe how difficult this question is, right? People are going to really struggle, I think, to get this. So the question that you have to answer to have a chance of winning Football Manager 2024 is as follows. What colour card would result in a football player being sent off the pitch? Now, that's toughy, and I think people are going to struggle with that, but I'll just read it again. What colour card would result in a football player being sent off from the pitch? And you can obviously email your answer to that email address there, which I'll read out, ec.competitions@localiq.co.uk, ec.competitions@localiq.co.uk, with a subject line, Pinken Football Manager Competition. That would secure your entry. Or you can post your answer to Pinken Football Manager Competition, Prospect House, Ruin Road, Norwich, Norfolk, NR1, 1RE. The closing dates for entry is April the 26th. 2024. So you've got about 12 days or so from when we are recording this podcast. And obviously there are certain terms and conditions that do apply, and you can check those out at pinken.com. And obviously that one winner will be chosen from all the correct entries received at random. So if you haven't had a dabble in Football Manager, it will, as it does with me, take over your life if you do win that competition. So all of the relevant details are there, and good luck to everyone involved, and particularly in answering that really tough question that's been set. I think that is your lot. It's been a bit of a longer pod this week. It's probably stretched out a little bit longer than I wanted, but hey ho, it's a big win for Norwich City. The playoffs are within grasp. And after a brilliant week for the Canaries that started with a Derby Day win and ended with 4 points on the road, we are very, very close now to hopefully some playoff football to enjoy. See you soon.